matters of time. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as her mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sound, sound, sound. So, one word that I really like is quietness. Because whenever a person thinks they can't meditate, or they can't be mindful, everybody can be a little bit more quiet. You know, just like when you go to a library and the librarian's like, shh. Like, oh yeah, I've got to be quiet. So quietness is a way, you know, we have to slow down, we have to be more mindful when we're quiet. And so, you know, just like it doesn't matter, you know, if you sit down to meditate and then it's when your neighbor happens to start to use the chainsaw, it's up to you or not whether, what's between you and that noise. You know, you're going to get angry and upset about it, or is it just going to be sound? You know, sometimes the sounds we like, sometimes the sounds we don't like. And so it's our ability to, you know, not be troubled by worldly things. Because what's the one true thing about the world? It's always changing. You know, everything's always changing. Sometimes there's things we like, sometimes there's things we don't like. But when it comes to our mind, it's harder to see. You know, it's like the wind. You know, we know the wind exists because you see the leaves moving. If you didn't see the leaves moving, it's hard to, or some sand moving or something moving, you wouldn't know that the wind was there. And so the mind is hard to see. And so it's more difficult to notice that it's just a sense object. So when a thought's arising, it's just, you have consciousness, which is cognition. So that's the faculty of knowing. And then you have mind, which is like mind state. So you've got a good mind state, a bad mind state, an expansive mind state, a contracted mind state. You have some kind of mind state arising. And then that mind state will color the Dhamma. So Dhamma also means thought or mental condition or nature. Nature is probably the closest word. So you have a mind state that's arising in the present, and you have a mental nature. And then we go and believe that mental nature. We go, yes, this happened in the past, and I was like this, and they were like that, and these things happen in the future, this will happen like this, and that will happen like that. But all of it's just total delusion. At the moment, the past doesn't exist. At the moment, the future doesn't exist. All we have is these six sense objects arising that we're reacting to. And so when we meditate, it's an opportunity, otherwise, even if you're not like a monk or whatever, it's an opportunity that's like a temporary experience of being a monk. Because what we're doing when we meditate is renouncing. We're renouncing sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, and thoughts. And instead, we're trying to give up desires, worldly desires for those things, and instead pick up noble desires. So the desire, you know, to have tranquility, the desire to develop peace, the desire to develop positive mental states. To begin with, we aim to develop a peaceful mind. And so there's three stages of peace. One's called Kanika Samadhi. And so that's when we develop to the point where our mind just stops for a little bit. And it's like I think Tenzin Lee from the Thai forest tradition, he was 1950s, was towards the end of his life, I think. And he said, Kanika Samadhi is like when you dive under the water and then come up to the surface again. I think it's a very good explanation. So your mind will just stop for a while. And so you can no longer be with your meditation object. At that time, there's just perfect peace in your mind. And then, so some people, that might only be the extent of peace they can develop. So to begin with. And so that's okay, because throughout a day, throughout a week, we can develop many moments of peace. And that peace will be a foundation. But actually in the Thai forest tradition, they say, don't just stop there. Then you develop the next stage, which is Upajara Samadhi, and that's like your ability. You know, you hear some teachers talking about lights and visions and all sorts of things. So some people, these things can arise. Some people, they don't arise. But you know Upajara Samadhi from our ability to sustain contemplation or to sustain our meditation object. Like it's, you know, the mind becomes very strong at that time. So you can actually be with your meditation object for a long period of time. With the Kanika Samadhi, you know, you might be with it at time, but you might be thinking sometimes, and sometimes you're with it, sometimes you get bits of peace. But by the time you're getting Upajara Samadhi, your mind is able to sustain your meditation for half an hour, 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. And we have different postures, so you don't have to stay in. You find the posture that works, the sitting, walking, standing. Generally, we don't do laying meditation because most people fall asleep, even though it's one of the options. But if you've got a really sore back, nothing works. And some people, like particularly lazy people, it's good to alternate your posture. You know, so you go, well, you get a reward, you know, you get a 10-minute laying meditation in the cycle. And because sometimes if you're just trying to sit, you might not be able to sustain it. So, and then walking meditation, you take 10 to 30 paces, so you make yourself a straight line path or as straight as possible. Sometimes in the forest, it might not be exactly straight. And you usually try and make it in the path line of the sun. So it goes east to west, or within 45 degrees of that in either way. 45 degrees, no, that doesn't work. Anyway, not directly north to south. So that's the only direction you don't choose. And so it's kind of in the line with the shade of the trees and things. And then, so you've got your path, and then you just walk. And either you can use, like, same with meditation, like Buddha or something, like Buddha with your feet touching the ground, or you can be with the sensations of the feet, or even metta, like a metta. But the point is to be mindful. So the mind is drawn inside. So you know what's behind you, you know what's in front of you, and your mind is directed at the mindfulness of the body. So whether it's the movement of the feet, the touching of the contact of the feet, once again, I always recommend, you know, trying what works. The mantras are good because you know when you're not meditating, because you stop doing your mantra and you, because some people, you can do 2 hours walking meditation and you haven't actually meditated, so you've got to be careful. And you build things up slowly. But the good thing about walking meditation is it's good for your digestion. Builds very strong mindfulness. Because have you ever noticed with sitting meditation, you can sit and then get up and get a, and something happens and you lose all of your peace. You know, you just were meditating and now it's all gone. While with walking meditation, that doesn't happen. And then there's also standing meditation, which isn't really taught, but I found that quite useful. Like go into a forest and just stand there and do your meditation for a time. And if the mind won't settle down, try open eye meditation. Just look at a leaf or a point on a wall and do your meditation with the eyes open. So the point is, you're trying to be with our meditation object. So however we do that, you know, once we have a means, then stick with it, you know. Because if you try 20 meditation objects in a day, I'm sure it'll bring you to tears. So that's not, the purpose is to develop peace. But at the same time, there's a word vimaksa. And vimaksa is like, not quite investigation, it's like skillful means, like a way to, we have to look at the causes and the effects and go in the right direction. So it's how the navigator gets the boat across the ocean. You know, if they just did what they did yesterday, they'd end up in a completely different country than they were intending to go. And so, you know, what is it that makes us correct our practice and learn what works? Because the slow path is the stubborn animal that doesn't want to learn. And so they even get hit with the whip and they still don't want to do the right thing. But the wise animal is the one that only has to see the shadow of the whip. And it says, I was doing the wrong thing. I'm going the wrong way. And so, meaning that if we always do the wrong thing and we never learn from our mistakes, then we're just bringing suffering upon ourselves. And so the best way is to see when we're going in the wrong direction ahead of time and go, I'm doing that again. You know, this is going to lead, I know the result of this because I've been here before. Or I've learned, I can see from what somebody else has said that that might occur. And so we're monks that develops our skillful means. And without skillful means, you know, this is why some people, they get like, you can get dull in your meditation or bored in your meditation or never really develop your meditation, because without some ability to learn how the mind works. So when I teach meditation, I'm not really teaching meditation, I'm teaching preliminaries to meditation. Because, you know, most people, it's useful to relax the body. It's useful to give up the past, the future. And so we come up with a means that settles our mind. You know? And so I have, you know, some means for myself that I don't teach because, you know, they're very direct for me, but they might not work for another person. So these are like, this is what we learn from our own practice. And I have some funny ones, like, because in the last 2 years I was helping with a computer project at one of the monasteries, and I found a little laminated card that I had, and it says, computers are on fire, the world is on fire, learn to be present. So that must have been my mantra when I was working with the computers. Because, I mean, really, what are they but a box with some metal on it? You know, they say everybody talks about the cloud, but it's just boxes with metal around the world, you know. And people are, getting attached to these things. But, it's no different to the Dark Ages. It's just called something else, you know. So it's still just people with their minds and their own difficulties. And what we call technology is just quicker development to get our designs, really. We don't have to see the mess of a toilet anymore. We don't have to lug water and buckets anymore. We don't have bumps in the roads anymore. But, what does it all mean for our minds? And so we've got to be careful that if we just follow the path of convenience, then we'll never see the need to practice. So this is why we have to contemplate, if I don't do this, what will be the result? And that's why, like in Buddhism, the Buddhist path starts with generosity. And because when we give, most people, that's something that they have struggled doing, is giving. So whether we give of our time or help elderly people in the community or help with running costs of monasteries, or like this kuti, they have the kuti projects at monasteries like here where they build things. Or when I was a layperson, I helped out with the nuns' monastery. And I used to volunteer like at a garden at a retreat center. And like our own family members when somebody's sick, or cooking an extra meal for a homeless person. There's many things that we can do. And that stems from generosity. Because then we start to think, I am my life, I'm comfortable. So maybe, I don't do that extra holiday, or, I don't buy that bigger television, or I don't buy a new car, and I use that money to actually, help people who are more in need. And so what happens with generosity is, I think I was very fortunate that I came into this life generous, but generosity means that the mind is very close to thankfulness and gratefulness. Because when you're thankful and grateful, that's the mark of a good person. Basically, a thankful and grateful person, they're somebody, very rare to meet, a truly thankful and grateful person, where that's the total intent of their heart. And so, outside of Buddhism, you could say the mark of, a person of any religion or any walk of life, if they're thankful and grateful, that's a true person. So it's a very, very refined quality. And so generosity is like a mark of somebody, because they're taking what is theirs and they're saying, maybe to be content with what I have, that I can give, And whether we give up our time, like I used to give at the monastery, I had quite a good job at the time. And there was an Anagarika, a person in white there, who wasn't very good at cooking. So I used to always go and buy heaps of freezer food. So then every time he would have the cook, he could just cook pieces and stuff. So he didn't have to stress out. Because some people, they're terrible cooks and they don't want to cook. And so I used to go and buy like $150 of freezer food every time I went to the monastery. And the other Anagarikas used to complain, because every time this guy... it was his week to cook, suddenly all of these pieces and things would just appear and he never had to do anything. I didn't tell anybody at the time. I think he knew. But, so finding little things, ways we can help people who don't otherwise, take a little bit of stress away from them. And so Thai Ajahn Tenajan Tui, who came to Western Australia when he was about 70, about 20 years ago, he's still alive now. And he only learned a few lines of English. And one of the lines of English that he said is convenient but troublesome. And I think there's something we should all memorize. Convenient but troublesome. So troublesome first is good and convenient later. But convenience first is bad. Because convenience first, then... we're never going to look at the difficulties, so we're not going to want to try and improve ourselves. And so this is one of the problems with the modern world, is everything is so convenient now. And, you know, somebody asked him about satellites, and he said, yeah, you know, the defilements are just going higher and higher, and now they're crapping all over us. So meaning that, you know, we have convenience, but now everybody can be contacted on their phones all the time. You know, before you had to, you know, get in a horse and cart and go over there, or send some messenger with a message because somebody was dying. And now we can all contact everybody at our convenience. But what does that do to our lives? And so, you know, I know people who, you know, they just tell their friends, okay, nobody contacted me this week. Now I'm having a week without my phone. And these kind of things. And meaning that, you know, don't let technology, just because it's convenient, dictate our lives. You know? So if we're going to take the time to meditate, if we're going to take the time to develop peace, then we need to know that these things have a purpose. They shouldn't run our lives. Because, you know, it's like anything. We can be addicted to anything. And some addictions are harder to see than others. But it's like somebody who watches news all day, or television all day, what would that do to their mind? You know, that's all they're putting in there. And so before I became a monk, for about 3 years I was really working on my mind, and I saw this process, and I realized, so I totally stopped all television, and I would only selectively choose things to watch, you know, so, because I saw that these things impact your mind, you know. And so, you know, we know this with the child, you know, you're not going to let them, we all know, most people know this with food, you're not going to let a child eat candy all day long. But when it comes to the mind, you know, I started to see, well, most games are based on violence and speeding. And you know, and so what happens if people do this all the time? And one of my friends used to watch Chainsaw Massacres and wondered why they were depressed. And I'm like, well, maybe you should not watch those horror films. You know, and so the point is, it's like our actions have an effect. And so, you know, I started to change my life because I realized that to begin with, we need values, you know. And so in Buddhism, we have the precepts, and we have generosity, and we have mental cultivation. So basically, a positive development is our value in Buddhism. Looking at our own minds, because if we help ourselves, then we help others. Like, I think last week I was talking about the simile of the acrobat, where, you know, the two acrobats, you have to look after yourself. By looking at each acrobat looking after themselves, they're protecting the other person. If you try and help the other acrobat, you're both going to fall off and die. So, meaning, you know, we start with ourselves, and there's a bit of a trap when you start practicing a lot, because then the mind wants to go out and help other people, you know. But it's okay to help people, but we just focus on, you know, swimming to the other shore ourselves, because if you try and help too many people, then you might drown in the process. Meaning, you know, if you go out and do too many things, that's contrary to your own practice, it's going to be hard to sustain your practice. And so that's why in ancient India and ancient religions, it used to be based on the moon calendar. And so in Thailand and the Buddhist countries, they still have the moon calendar. And so you have 4 days a month, the full moon, the new moon, and the half moon days. And so that were the equivalent of the modern weekend. Except you just had 4 days. And the ancient tradition was that people who were really spiritual, lay people, on those days, then they would take, you know, the 8 precepts. So you wouldn't eat afternoon. You know, that would be a day of spiritual practice where you go and meditate. And so, not that people have to start this straight away, but that's the idea of having a period of time that's dedicated to practice. Because then a month goes by and you've done 4 days of practice, you know. Because it's easy for a year to go by and you haven't done 4 days of practice. And so the idea is you're putting in the important things into your life that's going to steer your life in the right direction. And so whether it's just a day where somebody doesn't watch television and go for a walk in the forest and you're more quiet, and you focus on meaningful things, because then that's how, you know, your values are going to start connecting to your actions. When I looked at my life, I realized I had all these aspirations, but they weren't connected to reality. So just have thinking you have values, and thinking one day you're going to do these things, but what's the pathway? You know, because the reality is life gets in our way. So if we don't put the important things at the front of our mind, at the front of our practice, then they're never going to happen. You know? Or they're going to be meek. And so that's the idea that the... the Buddha, by just teaching the generosity and the five precepts and the mental cultivation, you know, these are the things that lead to the first path of enlightenment. You know, it's called dana sila bhavana. The dana is like learning to freely give, like liberality, a mind that's totally liberal in giving. And then sila is starting with the precepts but ending in sense restraint. So sila is like the total inner balance of our faculties. And then bhavana is our ability to grow as a being, the ability to develop and think positive thoughts. So instead of randomly thinking when we're washing the dishes, you know, we can be really mindful, we can be really present, we can have a mantra. And then by every time we come back to our meditation object, every time we come back to mindfulness, every time we say, you know, these thoughts are just nonsense, they're just rubbish, don't believe them. You know, or you're just reacting, you're just a monkey running off to a forest. You know, come back to your meditation object. Or whatever it is, like, sometimes my mind is quite unruly. So I had one where it was like, you know, the train's left the station, it's on fire, it's out into the desert. So then, you know, you've got to somehow stop this burning train. You know, then you've got to get a repair team out, repair it. And then you've got to get a crane, you've got to turn it around. And then you've got to drive it back to the station. And finally you're back to the station, and then you can meditate again. You know, so meditation sometimes is not easy. And so having that acceptance that, okay, you know, the mind is untrained. Sometimes it wants to do its own thing. And so it might take 5 minutes to get the mind back to its peace sometimes, you know. But all that work is going to bear fruit. And you can't force the mind too much. So you've got to know when just to watch the mind, when to let go. But over time it becomes more skillful. And then there's different teachings, like the five ways of dealing with destructive thought, or even just, you know, breaking the mind into, is this an unwholesome or wholesome thought? Is this an unwholesome mind or wholesome mind? And by having that level of mindfulness, then at least that's going to bear fruit one day. So sometimes we can't get rid of, you know, the anger or the depression or the difficulty, but we can just see, well, this is an unwholesome mind, and this is arising due to past causes. I can't do anything with it now, but one true thing, it will change. You know, it won't always be like this. And then, so that little bit of wisdom is enough to let us let go a little bit. And I think I haven't mentioned it for a long time, but you know, I've had big problems with greed over the years. We all have our own defilements. And one at a time I worked on, you know, some of my worst ones. But every now and then I would get this greed, because in monasteries, some monasteries, they allow you to have lollies and stuff in the evening, which is a bit of a stretch of the early teachings. Because you're meant to be galani, meaning like you feel ill, and it's like sugar, honey, molasses. So there are things you're allowed. But if you're a greedy person and you're allowed to have these things, you know, you could eat a jar of sugar if you wanted. So anyway, over the years, every now and then, I remember this one range retreat, and you know, I'd been really good for a long time. And then one day this greed just kind of came and possessed my mind. And so I was like this greedy octopus walking for like 15 minutes up to the main building, you know, to get my lollies. And so I couldn't stop it, but at least I had enough mindfulness to be able to watch it and not delude myself of what was happening. And so meaning that sometimes, you know, we can't prevent ourselves, but then we know that this happened. And so the more we know these things, and then we can train the mind when things are feeling good. You know, then like what I learned, the reason we have greed is because we don't have strong truthfulness and determination. Yeah, so in Pali, that's Saccha Adhitana, which is two of the 10 spiritual faculties developed by a Buddha. So I just made Saccha Adhitana my mantra. So every now and then, you know, I do a day where I'm building those two paramis because they're the weak link in greed. You know? But obviously it took time to come to that realization. It took me 3 or 4 years to work out, you know, the strongest tool for that particular thing. And so we can't work on everything all the time, but at least if we, you know, learn from our experience, then we can do the rainy day training, you know, like we save for a rainy day or have our insurance or whatever if the house burns it down. So this is when our life is good, that we don't just take life for granted. You know, when life is good and everything is going well, that's the time to practice, because we've got to prepare for old age, sickness, death. We've got to prepare for the worst of our defilements coming up. Because when our mind's weak, you know, that's where they're going to really come and possess the mind. And so when we have periods of suffering and difficulty in our lives, then we just see, well, you know, there's some work for us to do. You know, there was a cause for the suffering to arise. So now, you know, as life gets better, as things get easier, you know, don't just forget this. You know, suffering is to be known. Because when we know suffering, then, you know, we can know there is also an end to suffering. And there is a path leading to the end of suffering. And the main cause of suffering is desire, unwholesome desire. So instead of the desire for overcoming suffering, we have the desire to not want to look at that and just follow all of our worldly inclinations. And so that's because of upadana, which is attachment. And so when I started talking about these things, you have, just look at the process of the mind when it thinks about something of the past. So a thought arises and the mind believes it's real, that this person is real, this experience was real, and these things are going to happen in the future. But that's just the thought. It's not actually real. So this conventional reality is useful to the point where we function in the world. You know, and then, you know, we don't have to shout, "Oi, blob over there!" You know, so names and things are useful. But once they invade the mind and remain, they're no longer useful. You know, so this is where our suffering arises, because we're believing these thoughts as real. You know? So, but what is true is there's elements arising and passing away. There's earth, water, fire, wind, space, consciousness. And then we put labels on it so that we can coexist. But now we not only believe those labels, now we believe that the lineage of those labels in the future and past are real. But they're not. And so this is where our suffering's arising, because, you know, that's why if somebody's house burns down, they might suffer, because they say, "It's my house." But when you die, is it still your house? Is it also the cockroach's house? Like, whose house is it really? You know, one day the world's going to, you know, burn up or dry up and disappear. You know, is it really our world? So, and then the extension of that is then when you're counting your neighbor's cows, you know. So you not only have your own suffering, but now you have your neighbor's suffering as well. And so just to show you, like, this desire, this attachment, this clinging, this craving, it's all arising at the mind. So the mind is the source of our suffering. And so our meditation, when I teach preliminaries and things, they're just to give an idea that, you know, we have our own means, we have our own skillful things to do. And then we should try and apply to that every day, whether we meditate for 5 minutes, or we meditate for an hour, or we meditate for 3 hours, or we have bits of mindfulness all through the day, or you know, we sit quietly in the forest on a bench for half an hour, or whatever it is our practice. But those are the things that bear fruit so that we have mindfulness. Because once we have mindfulness, then we can start to see what's actually going on in our mind, and we can start to see where this source of suffering is arising. Because if we don't fix these things, then when we get sick, when we lose things, when our body breaks apart, or we lose a limb or something, we're going to really suffer over it, you know. But in Buddhism, if you believe in past lives, like, you know, we do in Buddhism, you know, Ajahn Tate said, you know, past lives should be counted in their millions. So, you know, at what point are we going to see that our attachments are not serving us? And so, but to understand that, we need a happy and a peaceful mind. So this is, it's pretty deep stuff. You can't just sit down and say, right, all attachments go. My mind be peaceful forever now. And forevermore your mind's peaceful. No, I mean, it's a lot of work. And so by the time a being is enlightened, they've actually become like a higher god. Like their minds have become the highest form in existence. And then they use that power to give up their attachment to everything. So we just ask, you know, what causes have I brought into my life? What causes have I developed in my mind at the moment? You know, what is the result that in this life so far, how have I developed the mind? You know, how have I developed peace? How have I developed generosity? How have I developed giving? And so forth. And so that's the talk. There's plenty there, so we'll do a meditation. Start by getting yourself in a comfortable position, upright and alert, comfortable at ease. And just let the whole body settle. We just see that process of reaction. We don't need to react. Make the body as comfortable as possible. From inside out, from the bone marrow to the skin, just relax the whole body. Once it's good enough, anytime in meditation, you can just take a deep breath and start again as well. Never feel we can't do it. Never feel it's too difficult. Just start with the preliminaries, relaxing the body, relaxing the eyes. Just give up this process of letting the mind go outside. Just let the mind be with the mind, content and at ease, just to be here right now. Bring up this sense of quietness. Now is a time for seclusion and inner quietness. Don't need to worry about sights, sounds, smells, taste, touch, or thought. Just let them all be like passing clouds. And see them, you don't need to get involved. The body is relaxed. The eyes are relaxed. And just let the mind settle. See that when the mind goes outside, you know, that's where suffering arises. That's where delusion arises. That's how we get lost. goes out and believes a thought, reacts to a sense object. There's suffering there. Even in things that it likes, it's not peaceful. So now's the time to sit up. Process of meditation and renunciation. We guard the six doors of the senses. In short, we watch the mind. And if we're Buddhists, we can bring up inspiration in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Also, it's good to bring up the four Brahma Viharas, benevolence, this kind of wholesome compassion, wholesome appreciation, good actions of others and ourselves. And let the mind rest in equanimity, looking on at things evenly, doesn't need to get involved. It's not boredom or indifference. It's like a high and sensitive balance. Like an inner poise. Balanced in ease and peace and luminosity. Now if we have a meditation object, a theme that we use, that we're comfortable with, now's the time to bring it up. Otherwise, I'll give a guided meditation for the breath, for those who wish. Or just let it be background noise. Just start with an in-breath coming in, out-breath going out. In-breath is the present moment. Out-breath is the present moment. Try to have a place of focus that the mind can settle. The mind can rest at that place. Idea of still flowing water, resting at one place, and still aware of an in-breath, still aware of an out-breath. Comfortable and relaxed. Restful and at ease. Give up any hindrances, anything that is blocking us. Just let it all go. Throw all the burdens away. Now's the time for peace. And even though things may arise in the calm, you don't have to react to them. Just let them arise, change, and cease, all on their own. In-breath is the present moment. Out-breath is the present moment. just of an in-breath, just of an out-breath, content with just this much, fewness of desires, fewness of wants, total presence. See, there's a joyful ease to quietness, the ease of being free from the world, even just a little bit, even just a grain of sand. The in-breath comfortable and relaxed, and the out-breath comfortable and relaxed. See if we can increase our attention. Be aware of the totality, the fullness of the in-breath, fullness of the out-breath. Bright heart, sense of luminosity, the fullness of the in-breath, fullness of the out-breath. So allowing our inner faculties to be totally balanced. Radiant peace, letting go of everything.
as we continue with the in-breath and the out-breath, just look at our own mind, where the tranquility, quietness, joy, ease. We just choose one means of being with our meditation that's most suitable to us. We sustain the meditation. Not trying too hard, not trying too little. We just make it just right, just so, in the middle. Just with an in-breath, just with an out-breath, with our chosen means, I'll be silent the next 12 minutes or so. Just do the best to be a good apprentice. Not worry about anything. see how the mind is after half an hour of meditation. The tranquility or joy or ease, even just a grain of sand of peace. Have to look at the results and the causes. So we can encourage ourselves for why we should commit to practice. Why mindfulness and meditation is of such great fruit and benefit. A rare thing in the world. Something to be treasured. Difference of a rock and a diamond. It's incomparably different. No matter whether it's easy or not, it's just the process of trying. It's the most important thing. We have a sense of benevolence to ourselves. May we be happy to those in this room. May we all be happy to those on this property, the kangaroos, the ants, the birds, the tree devas, any devas who have visited us this evening, and all beings everywhere, above, below, and all around. All beings in ourselves, may we all be happy and at ease and maintain well-being in ourselves. May we take this peace and ease into our lives. In our own time, we may end the meditation. And just before we do the chant, I just wanted to mention, at the time of the Buddha, they didn't really have money like for monasteries. People would go to monasteries and, you know, build a monk's hut, or somebody who was rich would build a whole monastery and furnish it. But these days, so they have like an account for monasteries. So at the moment, this monastery, soon they're planning to try and build a monk's hut, so it'll cost $10,000. But even like the running cost of this monastery over the years, this came out of, what was it, seven families total at the beginning? Yeah, just a handful of families, you know, all this came out of. And so, just to say that people, if they ever want to give or volunteer their time, the email for this temple is cbswa56@gmail.com. Or there's usually posters here. The nice thing about donating towards a kuti is then, you know, when that gets built, then whoever meditates there in the future, people get good karma for it. Usually that's one of the number one things people like to donate towards. Because then, you know, for the, even if you don't get enlightened, maybe even next life, you're still getting good karma for that. usually it's harder to get, people to pay for the power bills and stuff like that. But that's why these days, generally, a monastery or an abbot of a monastery will run funds. But we don't solicit in Buddhism, so it's not like, thou shalt do this. People are going to look into their own minds and see what's good for them. You know, I used to like driving the monks and offering for particular things, because then I knew what it was going for. Just to mention, yeah, so that is starting. And it would just be made out of plywood, and it would be built probably in 2 days. It was just a little hut that we would share for the rain tree.
So just to explain, these are the things that happen. And because there's just been a very small group of supporters who have basically supported this monastery since its inception. And so all of this has just come out of the handfuls of a few generous people. And also there's rooms in the monastery, so there's people can come and stay here and have a little personal retreat. And so, you know, monasteries are resources. And so they're good things to make use of. So anyway, that was all I wanted to say. We'll finish with the chant. Thank you all for coming. Now let us chant the verses of sharing in aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And a little blessing. Called the Anamodana.
Yata varivaha pura pare paranti sagarang evang eva hitodinang petanang upakapati chitang patitang tunghang hipameva samichatu sabe parantu sangapa chando panara so yata manichotira so yata sabityo vivachantu Sabaroko vinasatu mate pavantvan tarayo sukiti kayuko pavahapivadana sili sanichang vuta pachayino chataro dhamma vatanti ayuvano sukang